Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Have you ever noticed that most people are not very good at religion? Today, we return exclusively to the podcast environment, and we examine how even though we hear and see religious people talking and blogging and posting about all the issues facing our world, when we get behind the scenes, most of them are not very religious at all. Now, this may end up being a very good thing for the world. So join me now as we see beyond Oz's curtain and all the religious containers in favor of a universal faith that can be shared and accessed by everyone, even those who suck at religion. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. And I'd like to welcome you to this edition, this program, and I'd like to welcome you to Sunday. Today, folks, we are switching gears. We are now exclusively back in the podcast environment after 31 weeks on air at a local radio station. I have now moved back exclusively to the online environment. Part of the reason was that it just needed a little bit of creative space, trying to produce radio programs that fit exactly within the time frame is always a challenge. It also had to frame up my concepts and ideas in ways that are more palatable to a radio audience, more palatable to a more conservative audience. And I just found that overall, the people who respond and especially respond most favorably are those of you who have tuned into the podcast, who have been subscribing for many, many years. And so I want to thank you for that. And now it's all yours, right? 100% podcast, Beyond Everything Radio. And what are we talking about today? Well, today, the title of our talk is called Poor Religious Performance is Good News for the World. That's right. Poor religious performance is good news for the world. And what am I talking about? You know, I've talked to a lot of you this week, a number of you over the past couple of months, about frameworks, about religious perspectives, about all these kinds of things. And I've shared with you my own kind of challenge of trying to just deconstruct everything. I want as little of a framework as possible because I see frameworks as really incubators. They're cones to kind of keep you within the margins of fair play. But man, don't get addicted to them. Don't get married to them. As a result, I'm always deconstructing things. But not for the purpose of just destroying it all, just for the purposes of getting to the pure essence, the kernel. You know, when I look at the global scale of world religions, when I look at all of the different religious practices that all the diverse people of the world do, it just amazes me just how many people actually suck at religion. And I don't mean that as a slight. I'm not saying, oh man, you people just are bad people. I'm just talking about the masses are not very good at religious practice. And, you know, within every single community of faith, every religion, the vast majority of people do not even appreciate or even adopt the core tenets of their belief system. Do you realize that? Part of that has to do with people just growing up in a family that had a certain religion, and then they just adopt that religion because that's what mom and dad were. Most just fall under this umbrella of the religion nominally. It takes a while for it to sink into the heart and mind of a person, right? And you see this everywhere, whether you're at a church or a synagogue, you know, pastors, priests, imams, yogis, they're all constantly teaching their followers to go deeper. And they're always trying to help them go deeper into their respective practices and kind of get to the essence of why that religious practice is even there. Anyway, I mean, they're trying to move the people beyond a perfunctory performance into a deeper inner experience. But despite their effort to help people get beyond the container and into the contents, a recent Barna study revealed that in the Christian world, two-thirds of the Christian faith are only casual believers. Two-thirds. In Islam, we find that there are droves of Muslims fleeing fundamental environments simply because they want to be in a place where there's an allowance for freedom of self-critical thought. It's not that they're trying to abandon Islam. It's just that the fundamental side of Islam is so restrictive and unpalatable even to Muslims. In Judaism, up to 40% are defined as non-religious and only practice through the lens of tradition. You know, just like you might practice, you know, a Christmas tradition, but may not subscribe deeply to Christianity. You see, Hindus and Buddhists, their key spiritual practices, respectively, are yoga and meditation. And the masses of people who subscribe to that religion don't even do yoga or meditate at all. Yet if you asked them on some kind of a questionnaire, what are you? They'd say, I'm a Hindu. I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Christian. I'm a Muslim. I'm a Mormon. I'm whatever it is. And so you don't have a high level of compliance by the masses, folks. In fact, this is why I say most people are not very good at their religion. And for too long, I think people have just adopted the label of their religion. And what you're seeing now with modern people is that they're really honestly admitting that they're not in. You know, they're not as in as they thought they were, or they were sort of in and they went to college and their professors challenged their beliefs and their beliefs just crumbled to the floor. Now they're just not anything. And as a result, you see this huge decline in mainline religions. People are more and more moving away from being indexed as a particular religion. And there's another reason for that, which I'll get into a little bit later. But, you know, if you look at the people who are good at religion, if you look at the most zealous within each and every type, the more fundamental you are, the more extreme you become. There's often this palpable distinction, if not separation, between the holy and the common, right? I mean, if you go too far into your religion, it ultimately makes you kind of weird. If you keep creating more and more distinctions between yourself and everybody else so that you can feel higher and holier than others, then you end up having this true holier-than-thou experience, and you kind of end up cutting yourself off from outsiders. This is a trend across all religions. And this really begs the question as to whether or not the focus of this religion has ever been the contents, namely God, or inner experience, or transcendence, or the divine, or if it's always just been about the container and trying to climb in the ranks and files of all of that. You see, if you look back at the true masters, the Gandhis and the Mother Teresas, these are the rare exceptions among the masses of the religions. The true masters care very, very little for their power or their notoriety, don't they? Right? When you see somebody flying around, some pastor with his own personal jet and rings that make Super Bowl rings look like, you know, costume jewelry, you immediately realize that this holier-than-thou rock star kind of thing is not so much about the contents that they're preaching. It's all about the container that gives them power and notoriety. And, you know, with so many people opting out of religious frameworks, they're actually not abandoning spirituality. They're just saying that that particular framework of religion is no longer working for me. And they're pursuing a free-floating or what is known as unaffiliated spirituality. I am spiritual but not religious. This is a huge growing wave. I welcome this trend, and, you know, this podcast over the last 6 years has increased and grown in number because of this growing trend. The number of people who are looking for spirituality but not a religion find this content extremely helpful for them. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to serve you in this way. And ironically, you know, when we talk about these frameworks, I have a number of people who come through coaching, or they'll talk to me or email me, and they'll say, hey, Kev, what do you got? You know, do you have a church? Do you have something like that where we can get involved, we can get plugged in? And I turn around and I have to say to them each time, I'm so sorry. I would never, never do that to you. And of course, this leaves them with this kind of void, an existential question that they have to face internally, which is kind of the whole point that I'm trying to drive us at. You see, if we have to prove that our religion is better than another religion, then we've already traded the contents for the container. Right? Low-level religion always believes my God can beat up your God. And I just think modern people are just getting beyond this. They're just over it. Right? Jesus put it this way. When he quotes the Jewish Shema, and this is what it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." And so the Shema, which is the first half of that, is in Deuteronomy 6:4. And then the second part and the whole verse that I read is out of Matthew 22, verse 36 through 40. It's really important. We hear this all the time, but we don't really take it to heart. You see, this verse is really transformational if it's taken deep within the soul. I mean, if the truth of this sinks in, its purpose is to deconstruct any notion that our particular religious framework, our system, our practice has any real value to God. If in the end, our devotion to God is not reflected in how we love other people. You think about it. What good is your love for God? What good is all the pomp and circumstance of your religion and all that you know if you treat people like crap? You see, the litmus test is not how high up the ranks of religion we can climb, but whether the love of God shows up in how we treat others. Now, that measurement really shows just how bad most of us are at religion. And this is why I think most religion is so bad for people, because we're so bad at it. We never get to the real essence of it. We don't use the framework of religion to drive us towards love, which it can. And in many cases, it does. It's not always, but in many cases, it does. And it's good in that sense. But that not always. You see, our love of God is tested by our behavior in traffic, right? How well are you letting that guy or gal cut you off? Did you just accelerate to kind of squeeze them out? You know, why are you not there to help promote others? You see, it's tested by our generosity toward the endless needs around us. I mean, you cannot go through a day without seeing the needs of people on the side of the road, the needs of people perhaps in your neighborhood. And so often we just turn a blind eye where we choose not to know about the needs because they're so overwhelming. And that way we don't hold ourselves accountable to do anything about it. You see, our love of God is tested by how much it costs us to be loving, right? How much does it cost you in terms of your time or your talent or your treasure to give away your life in service to others? You see, let's not talk about how great our religion is. Let's not try and convert people and play Red Rover with the city if we can't be kind, if we have no love. See, our love of God is tested in all those ways. It's never tested by how much theology we possess. You see, God doesn't say only those who know all of these huge theological books are going to have my love and support. It's not tested by how many hours we've spent performing some perfunctory ritual. It's not how many candles you lit. It's not how much time you spent kneeling. It's not how much time you spent praying, fasting, or any of it, meditating. None of it matters. You see, if you have to be right instead of loving, you've already lost the game. If your tradition means more to you than mercy, it's game over for you. If your theology is bigger than your compassion, it's just a big empty shell. It's nothing. If your identity hinges on your distinctions, then you're just creating a false self, a religious false self that's wrapped in the lie of individualism, as if you existed in an island all your own. You see, this is my point about religion. I'm not saying that religion is bad, but let's ask critical questions of religion. Do the five pillars of Islam eliminate large-scale poverty? Does yoga or meditation produce clean drinking water? Does inviting Jesus into an imaginary door in one's heart bring equality into the world? Does solidarity with religious tribe end war, or does it produce war? You see, can religious frameworks help solve the world's problems? Yes, they can. Of course, somebody who is doing yoga and meditating may ultimately be moved into compassion and acts and right doing so that there can be clean drinking water, right? You can be moved by the five pillars of Islam to help eradicate poverty. Of course, when those things move on the heart, but only if these religions and religious practices are a means to love. If they're a means to themselves, forget it. It's an empty shell. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of your life. If it moves you to love, it's something worth exploring. You see, inner transformation, it cares nothing about our labels. Divine union sees no division. There are no distinctions that override our need to love one another. Love celebrates both diversity and unity at the same time. You see, it's not binary. And religions are like schools from which we're all supposed to graduate into an authentic and integrated faith. But so often we just stay stuck in school, in detention, one form or another. And that can actually be good news because most of us suck at religion anyway, right? So if we realize that we're not very good at it, maybe there's something else we can look to. See, it's no longer necessary to climb and to appease, to crawl and to try and be something we're not. We don't have to posture anymore. We don't have to prove to people anymore. We don't have to label others as different than us and have a scorecard kind of theology and approach to life. The Apostle Paul said none of it actually matters in 1 Corinthians 13 if in the end we don't love one another. So while religion isn't bad, it's just not ultimately helpful unless it exposes our pride and independence and moves us into love. It's supposed to incubate love, justice, and mercy within us. If your religion does that, then stay in your religion and grow with it. If it's not incubating love, justice, and mercy, but instead incubating individualism, competition, tribalism, patriotism, it's us against them, then folks, open your eyes and get out. You see, if religion so happens to make a change in us, where it does incubate love, justice, and mercy, then you know it wasn't the religious container that did it. It was actually God working through the practice. And that can happen through multiple types of practice. There's not just one practice, one spiritual practice. In one day, it could be prayer. In other days, it's obedience. In other days, it's serving. Another day, it's something else. You see, it's the work of God that's done in all people every day in every single atom of the universe. And once you see it everywhere, then all the frameworks kind of resolve themselves into a single location, that of love. And if you can just kind of strip it all away, it becomes, how are we loving? And so what I thought I would do as a kind of way to answer some of those who ask, what can I do? How can I be involved? What should we say? How do we approach life then if I get rid of this huge bulk of religion around me? I'm just going to offer you one sentence to try on. And it's a sentence upon which no single religion could ever improve. Right? If you get this, if it's said with sincerity of heart, if you can say this sentence with authenticity of intention, with your whole soul and your mind, it would comprise every faith in the world, right? You wouldn't miss out on the best that any of them could produce. And it can be said in any environment, this sentence, and it can be directed toward any being, either human or divine. And the result of this sentence, if said with truth and sincerity of heart, is that it will produce inner transformation. Do I have your interest? Are you ready to hear it? Here it is. I don't have to serve you. I get to serve you. That's the sentence. I don't have to serve you. I get to serve you. I don't have to love you. I get to love you. Right? I'm not you, you're not me, but I'm not other than you, and you're not other than me. Right? This sentence, I don't have to serve you, I get to serve you, reframes all of the junk inside of us. It reorganizes our power plays, our postures, and our own pride. And it puts us in a place of self-divestment, of emptying ourselves for the service of others. If you got this right, you will get everything right. If you get it wrong, you won't get anything right, ever. You'll get everything wrong. And so it's okay that we suck at religion. Perhaps our poor performance has allowed us to break free of institutional grasp and finally be open to love. Well, I hope so, at least. I hope that sentence will resonate in your heart and mind. May you try it on at the time when you least think it would have an impact, and watch what happens in your soul.